This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. A new governor-appointed task force is rushing to meet a six-month deadline to submit solutions to the governor on the healthcare workforce. This is while some state officials say that the healthcare system in the state is mid-crisis. Last month, two Western Wisconsin hospitals closed suddenly, leaving that region without some essential services. The state officials have referred to that situation as a canary in the coal mine. Here to talk with us today about the healthcare workforce situation are Rick Abrams. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Healthcare Association. Gina Dunick-Champion, she is executive director of the Wisconsin Nurses Association. And Ailey Peterson, who is CEO of Western Wisconsin Health. Thank you all for joining us today for this conversation. So let's start by setting the stage a little bit on that governor's task force on the healthcare workforce. It has met twice now. We are showing some of the original charges from the governor when he set up the task force in January. You met twice, I said, recently, just this past Thursday, so you're churning along there. I'm wondering, I'll start with you, Rick, can you summarize from your perspective, your professional perspective, why it was so important to focus on the healthcare workforce shortage?
Shortage, Lisa, you know, is connected to everything that we do. It's connected to access to care. It's connected to quality of care. Whether you're a nursing home, an assisted living residence, a hospital, you need to be adequately staffed with the right people to provide the right care at the right time in the least restrictive environment. So bringing stakeholders, bringing policymakers, bringing all the people that come at this issue from different perspectives, critically important. The timing was absolutely perfect. Our timeline to get a report to the governor
by September is
very, very quick. But you know, we're behind the curve. So it's a pleasure, it's an honor for my organization and I to be represented. And we've had two very, very productive meetings, and we look forward to doing our job and getting it done.
What are you seeing with nurses in Wisconsin? What does that shortage look like?
You know, because no matter where a healthcare place may be, clinic, hospital, long-term care, you need a nurse. So the demand is really high. And it's a high-demand job, and it's right now there's a lot of turnover. Nurses are, a pretty big chunk of us are baby boomers, but we're really excited about who's behind us and the younger age, so we're feeling that there's hope yet.
But and nurses make up a majority of the healthcare workforce.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And so I think it's important that we look at them, and they are one of the priorities in terms of our task force, just because of what they do, where they are. And I'm pleased to bring what the perspective of our nurses in Wisconsin.
Ailey, you run a critical access hospital, a rural health clinic in Baldwin, Wisconsin. What does the healthcare workforce shortage look like in a rural hospital in the state?
Well, shortages in a rural facility are really detrimental to the community. We're already dealing with a shortage, a limited pool of applicants. And then when you understand the commitment that we have to our community to provide critical care, the two are well suited for a disaster. So I'm so grateful that we have this task force that's been set up by the governor to take action that's needed, it's critical. Also very pleased to serve as the chair of the Wisconsin Hospital Association Workforce Task Force to spend critical time on these important issues. In rural America, without staff, we can't provide care. At Ara Hospital, we're working to take innovative action to ensure that we have a sustainable workforce to care for our community and the region.
And 1.5 million Wisconsinites live in rural counties, so it's certainly an important part of the workforce. We want to also show some broader data on the healthcare workforce that was shared with your task force. We're looking at the Department of Workforce Development's projective job openings moving forward. On the screen, you'll see a list of common healthcare occupations. Each bar shows the number of openings in that field, with the blue part of the bar showing those who are exiting the workforce. Orange represents those who are leaving that profession, and green is the expected growth in that occupation. The main takeaway that the task force talked about related to this data is that there will be significant openings across all of healthcare, but clearly at the top of concern list, major gaps for home health, personal care aides, registered nurses, what that we just talked about, and nursing assistants. Jean, I'll start with you. Mm-hmm. What about those projected openings concerns you most for the state of Wisconsin?
So, you know, we're fortunate enough in Wisconsin to, every 2 years when we renew our license, we also must participate in an annual nursing workforce survey. So we've had some really good trend data that we can look at. And I think our struggles are, number one, not enough nurse educators. So trying to take care of that so we can increase the supply. And that's, our legislature has provided some loan forgiveness related to that. I also think that the as new nurses graduate, the onboarding process is going to be pretty important. And that's been tough because of the shortages. They're expected to jump in a little faster. And just the nursing workforce itself, because we're in demand in so many different areas, so many different fields, that and the different responsibilities that they have certainly provides that increased demand. We also have to talk about the anticipated increase in the number of older adults in Wisconsin, which is driving demand, at least for the nursing section, but it's our nurse assistants as well.
Well, Rick, I know you represent nursing homes, assisted living facilities in Wisconsin. When you look at that list, home health and personal care aides, certified nursing assistants, CNAs, those are your people, right?
Well, you know, absolutely, Lisa, and it scares the heck out of me, you know, mm-hmm. and certainly, again, you know, the task force is timely. You know, let me circle back briefly on the importance of the rural facility in Wisconsin. You know, I'm originally from New Jersey, and when I came out to Wisconsin and I began getting out into the environment, you know, those rural facilities, whether it's a critical access hospital, a nursing home, an assisted living, they're truly community access assets. And I think that the thing that makes Wisconsin, one of the many things that makes Wisconsin so great, is that there is good access for our residents to all of those facilities. But, okay, if we don't have sufficient financing, if there's not the staff and the right kind of staff mm-hmm. to be able to care for our residents, to have that family member, and I'll speak from a long-term care perspective, to have that family member have to travel 50, 75, 100 miles. You know, we saw that a lot during COVID or the pandemic, and we don't want to repeat that. And again, that is why, you know, we've got to do what we can, not only to do what we can through education and incentives to retain the good folks we have, again, personal care, nurses, certified nursing assistants, but we've got to create those incentives as early as possible, even in grade school, but certainly in middle school or in high school, to sensitize people to the importance of to not only the lure of the profession, if you will, but the importance. Because I can't think of anything more important than taking care of your friends, your neighbors, your family, and hopefully get them well back on their feet and back into society.
Ailey, let's talk a little bit about the status of workforce in our hospitals broadly. Your Wisconsin Hospital Association issued their 2024 healthcare workforce report. You mentioned that you're the mm-hmm. council workforce development chair. Looking at that data, WHA reported an 18% vacancy rate for licensed practical nurses and a 10% vacancy rate for registered nurses. DWD says there's a projected deficit of 20,000 nurses nurses by 2040 and 3,000 physicians by 2034. They expect 32,000 annual healthcare openings between 2020 and 2030. That's all of healthcare where those vacancies are. What are your key takeaways? If somebody's not going to read this report, what would you say is the most important takeaway?
Yeah. Well, first I need to start by giving some credit to my colleague in this work, Ann Zink, who's the Vice President of Workforce Initiatives and key player in this work, author of this workforce report. I partner with her to chair the committee to help industry come along with the work that we're doing, but she's great and has done a fabulous job. So I think what's important for those viewers out there to know and understand is that there is indeed a workforce shortage in healthcare. And this is exacerbated by the fact that our population is aging. 11,000 people enroll in Medicare daily. And those same individuals who are enrolling in Medicare are reaching retirement age and leaving the healthcare workforce. So it's a double-edged sword. As our patients need more care, we have less healthcare professionals to do that work. And so this workforce report highlights the various experts within the healthcare field that are most at risk. You mentioned nursing, but also technicians, laboratory technicians, radiology technicians, those critical players in the healthcare workforce who are needed to do this work. It's not all doom and gloom. I think we're at a really exciting time. Again, this task force is critical to helping come up with solutions. An innovative element that I think is truly key, particularly in rural areas and possibly in urban areas, is the grow from within model. And you know, the task force is looking at this. There's been some great funding over the years to help support this. My hospital has been the recipient of this for medical assistants, respiratory therapists, and surgical technicians. And what it does is it takes those aspiring healthcare professionals, maybe a certified nursing assistant who dreams of being a certified medical assistant, and this funding is given to hospitals so that they can provide scholarships to help put those individuals through a certified training program, provide on-the-job training, and provide a pathway to help them achieve their goals and provide critical care in many different professions across the healthcare continuum. And whether they stay at my hospital or join another hospital or long-term care facility, the point is it's growing our workforce based on those who are most interested.
One potential promising solution there that I'm sure the task force is talking about. Let's talk about this aging Wisconsin issue. We are aging faster than a lot of other states. We keep hearing about this silver tsunami. Mm-hmm. I know the WHA report, as you mentioned, talks about this. We know that the silver tsunami is saying that by 2030, one in four Wisconsinites will be at retirement age. We talked about those job openings for personal care CNAs and direct care workers who often support older adults in their homes and or facilities. There are fewer of them. There are also fewer nursing home beds available. Ailey, I just want to direct this to you. In the WHA report, it says that nursing home beds closures have created a bottleneck in post-acute care access. What does that look like for, say, your hospital?
Sure. So in our medical surgical department, which is the department that cares for patients who are hospitalized, we are small. We have 11 beds. When we have a patient who the right care for them is within a nursing home, but we can't discharge them to a nursing home because they don't have enough staffed beds, that means that we can't provide additional care for patients in our community.
They stay in the hospital.
They stay in the hospital. That slows down the whole process. We've been impacted this very specifically over the last 2 years, certainly exacerbated by the pandemic, but more so the workforce shortage. On the last 2 years, we have gone on diversion over 200 times, meaning that we have to send patients away because our beds are full. And these are patients who could have, who should have gone to a nursing home, but because of unstaffed beds, we can't release them. And I know I'm not alone in sharing stories like this. Now, as a result of that, we are constructing, we're adding new beds to our facility to be part of the solution for our community. But it highlights for you a very real life example of how not having available nursing home beds really eliminate the ability for us to get our patients to the right place for the care they need.
Rick, I know you shared with me that your perspective on the bottleneck, it's not just about the nursing home beds, right?
That's true, Lisa. You know, when you look at occupancy, you see, I agree with the reduction of nursing home beds, but a lot of that has to do in a very, very positive way with the growth of assisted living in our state. But our nursing home occupancy on average is about 72%. So the beds are there. The question is, and the challenge to all of us, is that we've got to get creative, is that because those patients that are probably awaiting discharge aren't a knee replacement or aren't a hip replacement. They may very well be middle-aged, which immediately makes them inappropriate for placement in a geriatric population, but we're confronted with substance use disorder, behavioral health issues. And so what we need in working with our hospital colleagues and with our healthcare professional colleagues, what we need is creativity. We need to create special environments, you know, that'll enable these folks to be in the right environment for care. And again, you know, the key to strong healthcare policy is the right care at the right time in the least restrictive environment and the most efficient way. We're lacking a little in that.
Do we have the workers to support these settings, post-acute care?
So, you know, I do think that if we're building the right environment and providing the support needed for those nurses, I mean, behavioral health is a huge issue. It was one of the priorities that came out of our group. That that if you can get those folks the education they need or the training, and having a placement, a building or outpatient, whatever, to take care of those individuals, and supporting the staff to do it, I think. Nurses will come. I think our psychiatric, behavioral, health techs, as well as, because we're talking about substance abuse, and also bringing in those addiction specialists.
This task force started out with such a huge charge. And in your first meeting, you heard about all the shortages we saw on the slide, but we've just here talked about behavioral health, substance use, medical, allied health, medical technician, nurses, oral health, dentists, doctors. Do you see, you know, you've only had two meetings, but do you see some coalescing around priorities? You can't do it all in the task force.
You know, Lisa, you know, it's an old saying that if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. Mm-hmm. So we absolutely have to do that. But, you know, after a second meeting, what we've done is that, I always think about challenges like we have, like a funnel. So at that second meeting, basically what we've done is we've poured everything in the broadest possible way into the funnel. And now we're going to start narrowing that funnel, and we're going to establish our priorities. You know, it's interesting. You know, the focus of the task force certainly is healthcare workforce. In the long-term care facility, we can't forget about the support services, the yes. dietary, yeah. the housekeeping, the maintenance, the activities. Because, you know, I got my start in long-term care as a state ombudsman, not in Wisconsin, in New Jersey. But it became very clear to me very, very quickly that the quality of life in a long-term care facility is every bit as important as quality of care. And I'm confident that as we continue our work with the TS Force, some of the solutions, whether they be in education and training, whether they be in a recruitment or retention, those solutions that we cobble together for the healthcare workforce will absolutely be able to apply for support services. And again, it's, in my mind, absolutely the right direction to go.
I know, Gina, I know you mentioned a concern around equity and diversity
yes.
in your comments on the task force. And mm-hmm. I know the WHA report mm-hmm. talks about this as well. 10% of Wisconsin RNs are people of color, where 20% of our state population is people of color. Why is that a priority? And then please finish your other thought.
Well,
too.
And I this kind of, my thought was about the need for innovation, because we know the old way isn't working. And I think everyone on our task force knows that the way we've been doing it in the past requires...
You mean recruiting, yeah. training,
yep. and everything. Just new thinking, innovation. What's the innovation? How can we support through innovation or even through technology or whatever, ways to help grow our workforce and at the same time support their the work that they're doing? So we know that there's models out there, there's virtual care. But so in terms of the diversity, We know that, at least in nursing, we've taken, even at the national level, a very deliberate approach to addressing the diversity of our workforce. And in particular, you know, when we look at my lens is nursing. But being able to care for the individuals that look like me, you know, is important, and more so than ever. And we've, let's face it, there is institutional racism, and that's, there's increased awareness related to that, but what do we do about it? And all the those other pieces that that we can do to increase our workforce, because that, when we look behind us, that's kind of who are, where our potential workforce members are.
People of color.
Yes.
Yes. I want to get back to Ailey talking about Western Wisconsin. Yes. We started the show talking about the two hospital closures by Hospital Sisters Health System, Sacred Heart in Eau Claire and St. Joseph's in Chippewa Falls. At the first task force meetings, DHS Secretary Kristen Johnson brought this up. She called it a canary in the coal mine. Would you agree with that? Do you expect more rural hospital closures?
Absolutely. And I just want to take a minute to share how these closures have impacted our hospitals. We were already at a crisis point when it came to psychiatric inpatient care, cancer care, primary care, and obstetrical care. As an example, at our small rural hospital 5 years ago, we delivered 100 babies. With this closure, we are now projecting 400 deliveries in this calendar year. We're staffing up for it. We're building new labor and delivery beds. We're doing everything we can to be part of the solution. But it is a real crisis, and our patients in our region need care. And I know that the groups who are continuing to provide care want to be part of the solution. 100%, I agree that this is a canary in the coal mine. For anyone who believes that this situation was unique to HSHS or Prevea, they're naive. Hospitals in Wisconsin, across the country, operate on razor-thin margins. This could happen to anyone. And part of the drivers of these challenges are regulatory burden placed upon hospitals and reimbursement challenges. These are two areas that require reform. It's critical. Obstetrical care is a great example of where reimbursement has not kept up with the needs that patients have in the community. So those are some key areas that need to be recognized and addressed.
Are policymakers acting quickly enough now, or do they need more urgency?
You know, I would say this is a call to action. This is a wake-up call for what has happened here, and attention needs to be placed immediately into these two areas. As I mentioned earlier, we were at a crisis point before. Now having these large hospitals and clinics close directly impacts our rural communities. As I mentioned, just some brief examples of how it's impacted our small hospital. So attention absolutely needs to be paid to regulatory reduction and reimbursement reform.
You mentioned reimbursement rates. I know in the report it talks about 65 cents for every dollar for serving a Medicaid patient, relating to a $1.6 billion loss annually. Eau Claire officials also blame those reimbursement rates on the hospital closures in that area. Can you explain how those low reimbursement rates specifically impact your hospital?
Sure. So these reimbursement rates really cover less than half of what it costs to provide hospitals to provide care. I'll stick with the obstetrical example because it's so real and it's so timely. For hospitals to continue to provide obstetrical care in rural areas, they have to make investments out of their own pockets to be able to sustain these services, because the simple reimbursement is not going to cover the cost. For example, we're adding 4 labor and delivery beds to our labor and delivery unit. It will take us 31 years to see a return on investment through the simple reimbursement mechanism. Our patients and community can't wait that long, and so it requires an investment of hospitals, of communities, of grants, and with government support, it's really necessary to get the work done.
Rick, over the last 3 budget cycles, I know that nursing homes, long-term care, home and community-based waivers have received significant investment from the legislature and the governor. Is that enough? Has that helped?
You know, Lisa, first, the regulatory burden, payment challenges, that sounds really familiar. You know, I can't say enough on behalf of my organization for the support that we have received from Governor Evers, his predecessor, Governor Walker, our state legislative leaders, both houses, both sides of the aisle. Just think, since 2016, 66 nursing homes have closed. 13 of which during the pandemic. Just think of where we would be without the assistance that our policymakers have provided us. You know, having said that, sure, more is necessary. So as we look at the next budget cycle, you know, again, with the legislature's support, we've been able to deal with the clinical and non-clinical components of a reimbursement methodology. We have probably over half the nursing homes in the state were built in the 1970s and 1980s. They need refurbishment. You know, they need rehabilitation. So our hope is in the next budget cycle to really focus, if they, as they say, on the property component of the rate, to make, people call their nursing homes for a reason. They're the people's homes, and we want to make them as best as they can be. Now, in addition to looking at the here and now, that the reimbursement methodology, I look forward to working with our partners along the healthcare continuum and our policymakers to figuring out a different way to finance facility-based or really all long-term care.
There's never going to be enough money.
At this point,
well,
yes.
Well, the DHS secretary has said, the governor said multiple times, Medicaid expansion is the answer. She said, the DHS secretary said in your task force, it would free up $1.6 billion. We know politically that's been difficult in Wisconsin, but we do have new maps in the fall. Mm-hmm. There will be a change in the makeup of the legislature. Mm-hmm. Do you think that Wisconsin is ready to approve Medicaid expansion? Would that help with some of these issues we've been talking about?
I recall when I was watching some of it was a panel presentation that was taking place in Eau Claire in response to the original one, HSHS, and the other places were announcing closure. And one of our legislators said, we don't need any more people being on Medicaid. And to me, that was not, you know, what we need is more money to take care of the people that are already on Medicaid and to be able to take care of those facilities that are delivering that care, because it's the model just is not working. And we know we can be innovative in other ways, but when we talk about the age of our facilities, I was a former nursing home administrator myself, and even then, it's like, you know, these long halls, and how can you be efficient in care when when you can't see everybody, et cetera. So I do see...
You think it's time for Medicaid expansion?
I think as one of the solutions, and probably one of the biggest, I think we need to take advantage of what's available. And again, this is about for the Wisconsinites, the people of Wisconsin.
So, Ailey, I know that in the past, the Hospitals Association has been effective in asking for increases in reimbursement rate. They haven't necessarily come out publicly in support of Medicaid expansion. Would that be different this time?
So I know that the Hospital Association and hospitals across the state have been so grateful for what has happened, particularly the last year, with the Medicaid budget and seeing those really necessary improvements. You know, what I would say is harken back to my original statement that what's necessary here is a Medicaid reform. And I think that needs to be the priority. So an example of that is we talk about long-term care, bottlenecks. At a critical access hospital, we provide swing bed care, which is really kind of a step down from an expensive tertiary unit to a nursing home when a patient needs that in-between hospitalization. Currently, Wisconsin Medicaid does not cover swing bed coverage. An example of an effective Medicaid reform may be Wisconsin Medicaid covering swing bed care to help release some of those bottlenecks. And it's an example of creative reform that's necessary, I think, as a priority when we look at Wisconsin Medicaid.
So Wisconsin, is Medicaid expansion politically possible in Wisconsin? Do you think it would help your profession?
You know, it would help, Lisa, but, you know, at this point, I never like to speculate, okay? And I think that especially for the work of the task force, we need to deal with what we know, okay? Now, if given the results of the November election, if we're better positioned for something like Medicaid expansion and the $1.3 billion of additional money has come, great, we can do so much more. But for the purposes, and again, I'm only one vote on that task force, but for the purposes of that task force report come September, we should deal with the here and now, not what some of us, most of us, hope is the future.
All right. Well, that will be the last word. Thank you all for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.